So glad to have you all here from Finger Lakes Opera, wonderful productions this summer with, and also just wonderful singers who are part of this whole world of opera, and our director, Jerry Floriano, as well. I guess if we could quickly go around, briefly introduce who you are, and my first question, and maybe you can put this into it, is what got you into opera, and perhaps think about it in contrast to what's most exciting to you now about opera.
Wow, that's a lot all at once.
Who wants to start
first? I can go first.
My name is Jarrell Williams. I'm from Brentwood, New York, and be playing the role of Shenard, the partygoer. And opera for me happened as an accident. I started out with piano at the age of 4, musical theater, chorus, and my ninth grade high school teacher was playing the overture to Le Nozze di Figaro. And I didn't understand why. So over a period of a year, she forced the class every day to listen to a different excerpt of the opera because of my commentary. And I kind of fell in love with it from that point on. And what's exciting about it now is that there's so many current trends and it's evolving. So we're now seeing operas, not just from the time that they were written, but dealing with current issues that we have in the world today. So that's, for me, really cool.
Hi, I'm Elaine Alvarez and I'm playing Mimi. So I'm the one that dies. Spoiler alert. I got into opera basically from birth. My mother is a music teacher, and they had newly arrived from Cuba in Miami, and my mother was continuing her studies as a music teacher and getting her master's and then her PhD, and she had a baby around. I have two older siblings, and she was studying the Mozart effect, so she decided to apply it to her newly born babe, and apparently it really took. And by 14, I had declared that I would be an opera singer. I don't know what I was thinking. I think that what I gravitated towards is still the reason that I stay in opera. I think that for most artists, you start doing an art because you have something that you need to express that you can't express conventionally through words. There's really something powerful about communicating with people on a different level. I feel music is sort of like an elemental communication, and that's still the thing that I think is most important about what we do, and still the thing that gives me the most joy is just figuring out how most clearly and most authentically to communicate with people through this unbelievably stunning art form. So.
My turn, eh? I'm Jonathan Burton. I'm playing Rodolfo here at Finger Lakes Opera. I got into opera initially because of the rock band Nirvana.
Oh, right. nice.
Now, doesn't make a lot of sense yet. I started playing guitar around 8 years old. And by the time I was 14, I was playing in studios and touring around with bands and things. And then Nirvana happened, and all of a sudden it became cool to play garage music, and services of guitar players were less and less needed, at least where I was from. So I was kind of looking for something to do, and I was looking at classical guitar, and it just sort of wasn't for me. And they asked me to be in the high school musical. So my mother says, why don't you take a voice lesson? I mean, I know you sing in the bands and stuff, but just see what happens. So this guy had been an opera singer, and he says, look, you ever thought about opera? I was like, no. So I went to his house every day for 2 or 3 hours for years and years, and that's sort of how I got started. What's exciting about opera to me today, I think, is I'm starting to sense something of an upheaval. The fan base and the people who are the consumers of opera are starting to have a louder and louder voice and talk about what they want to see and what they want to have on stage and what they miss about the old days and bringing it back and things like that. So that's kind of fun for me.
And although you're here as the director, you can answer
sure,
as well.
Yeah, sure, of course. I'm Jerry Floriano. I'm the conductor of the production. And like Elaine, my mom was a music teacher, and music was all around our house, piano and instrument study. And voice study, and I was in musicals as well in high school. And I also did actually a fair amount of backstage work as a stage manager at Chautauqua Institution when I was a kid. I grew up in Orchard Park outside of Buffalo. And but then in college and as I went to school for music, I started and became an orchestral conductor. So then I think the natural fusion of voice, which I had always been aware of and worked on actually as an undergraduate, and orchestral study as a conductor just kind of came together, and it was a natural fit. And I think it's, to me, opera is the greatest fusion of all musical art forms, all musical styles, because, and I think it was Berlioz who said, the greatest style of music or the greatest kind of music is when you have lots of great voices with a big orchestra, and then in opera you add to that sets and costumes and staging, and it's just irresistible. It's an irresistible art form, and I agree with Jonathan. I think it's a quietly becoming a very popular and coming back as an audience kind of a thing. Audiences are starting to gravitate toward it. They're starting to come back to the opera theater to see performances. And so in that way, it's a great time to be a part of this revival, which we think is happening.
And what you're performing here at Finger Lakes Opera is La Bohème, one of the most beloved classic story, frequently performed, and also the inspiration for the musical Rent, as many people sort of know a different version of the story. So wondering if you could talk each about what's the key to your role and what makes them, or if you want, you can sort of think of the opera generally, like what makes it so appealing and what you sort of bring to that story that's been told so many times. I'm again asking you multiple questions at once, sorry. generally.
I guess I can start. I think it's, the story is about transcendence and love and family. And I think everyone has a story to tell. And it kind of reminds me of the sitcom Friends, in a sense where everyone's kind of paired together in a way. But, you know, they're living under this roof that culminates and captures this amazing relationship of human interaction. And you think of how we go through life every day today, and in one fell swoop, the last second, everything can fall apart. And it's a story of resolve. It's a story of life. It's a beautiful story. I mean, that's the best way I can explain it, I guess.
It's one of the most, I think it's one of the most perfect operas in that it does, like Gerald said, it just tells a beautiful story. And it's not just the story of the couples, but it's the story of the guys and their relationship, their friendship together. And to answer, go back to your question, since I'm talking, I'll jump in. As the conductor of this production, and I mean, these singers and the other ones in our cast who aren't here this morning are so wonderful. I really feel as the conductor, it's my job to make everything move and flow in an as easy a fashion as it can, because they have so many things to worry about. They're obviously, everything's memorized. They're singing, and doing great Herculean feats with their voices and their gifts and talents. And then they're being staged in wonderful, creative and fun ways on stage, which doesn't always make for the best singing postures, but they do it anyways, and they sound fantastic doing it. And so my job as a conductor, I think, is to bring, there's something that Robert Shaw talked about when he was conducting, and he talked about the line of continuity. There's always a line of continuity in any great musical masterwork. And I think as a conductor, in addition to coordinating everything and making sure all the musical details are in place, I think my focus is always on the line of continuity. And what do we need to follow through? In an opera, it's even more, I think, complicated, because there are several lines and several opinions going on at the same time. And you always want to try and bring the audience's attention, much like a director does in his staging or her staging. You bring the audience's attention to what needs to be seen and observed at that point in time. The conductor does the same thing musically and tries to heighten the lines which are most important to be heard at that moment in time.
And that's, this opera has its standout beautiful arias and duets, some of the most just breathtaking music, but also these great, as an ensemble, you're a bunch of friends as well, interacting. Actually, someone already mentioned friends, but that sort of, so how is that, I don't know if you're into rehearsals already or establishing some of that bond and the playfulness as well. And the character, you know, it does start so playful, and I think that's some of the heartbreak is when it sort of reality really kicks in.
That's certainly one of the things that can make or break a production of La Bohème. I mean, short of what you need musically and vocally from it, if the cast doesn't really have much chemistry, It could be a long night. But
this cast has a lot of chemistry.
Yeah, we don't have that problem.
The first day of rehearsal, the director says, "Wow, it's usually not this loose until about the second or third week. Come on, folks, let's get it together because we're having too much fun." But it makes for a good show. You know, this, I realized as I was preparing this to come here that this was one of the first operas that I ever really became sort of intimate with on a grand scale, and one of my debuts in terms of a major. I'd done a lot of shows by then, but none of these big, you know, heavy-handed sort of Verismo operas. So after now 20 years of being with this show, one of the things that to me makes it so great is what it can mean to different generations of people. That there seems to be something you can get out of it no matter where you are in life. You know, when I was a young person and I was doing this show, that spirit of the youthful exuberance and wanting so bad to make some sort of statement with your art and all these things seemed like the center of the show to me. And then now as I'm looking at it, maybe it feels a little different to me. It's more about the relationships that you build with the people around you and you create things with each other. And then I was talking to my dad about it, and he was talking about how to him it looks like, well, there are things that you think are so important when you're young. And then when you get a little older, you see this different set of priorities. And then as I look at the show, that's there. That's in the show. And the characters sort of learn that as they go through it. So it's sort of universally great in that way.
Isn't it interesting, too? I'll ask you singers, and maybe you – I don't mean to jump in, Mona. Sorry. As you explore the relationships – in the opera, that kind of carries over, right, into, you know, outside of the opera and how you interact with each other off stage, backstage, and in the, you know, and the off times when we have. And I think that also then builds the strength within the opera. So it's kind of a, I see it as a thing that builds upon itself both inside and outside of the storyline.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think. When you have a collective group of people willing to work towards one goal, and that is to create an environment and a space safe for us, but also allows the audience to take 2 to 3 hours of their life and just pause and just have a release. You know, it's so important for us to be able to share that gift. But also, we spend so much time translating and memorizing and learning the notes on the page, and to be able to take it off and just see what we get back from each other. So it's so special. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Maestro said, it translates into real life because this is the one production of Bohème we will all ever do with this cast. And the next time we do it, we might have 1 or 2 or 0 of the same cast members. So it's always going to be a new experience, but we will always have something to build from. And I think that's also really important as well. Mm-hmm.
I sing a lot of Puccini, and like John, I've been doing this opera a long time. It's been my signature role. It's the role I always come back to every season. And the role that I think taught me the most about how to communicate with an audience and how to find my identity on stage within an opera. But it's always the opera that I tell people, if you've never been to the opera before, this is the one to go see, because Puccini has this very cinematic quality about the way that he composes and the way that he sets and creates people on the page. Oftentimes when we're staging, you don't really have to do a whole lot in the sense of figure out how to stage the scene. The staging is already there. It's about just figuring out how to do it in the way that's organic and sincere to the people that are doing it. I just always find that he writes in a way where he's really capturing the human experience, and anybody that comes to see the show recognizes themselves. Like one of these characters, or many of them, will remind them of something in their own lives. And I just think that the genius of that he wrote it so long ago, and here we are in 2019 doing it, and it's fresh and it's fabulous, and you know, it's a joy to sing, and it's always a joy to sing.
Well, and I think about Mimi, or actually all the characters, in some ways we know certain things about them, but in other ways he's just provided these sort of sketches, like, well, I sew, I live here, I'm lonely, I like to go to church, like, you know, there's just like a little bit. But then she's a very complicated character in a way, too. She's not a perfectly naive person.
None of his women are. He loves his women. I think the through line for all of the different Puccini operas is redemption through love. And it's always the female character that has to sacrifice mm-hmm. for that to take place. And I think you see the way that he writes for his women, how much he loves them and how much importance he gives to the strength, the inner strength of a woman. And Mimi is seemingly very shy, seemingly very quiet, but the moment that she opens up, it's like she's completely ablaze. And she's waited her whole life to love somebody the way that she loves Rodolfo. And that's why when she dies, she's peaceful about the fact that she's dying. What she's not peaceful about is the prospect that she might be destroying him with her death. So it's really like it's the ending is so beautiful in that she just keeps trying to soften it for him and tell him it's going to be okay. Everything's fine. There's such generosity in the way that she's written and in the love that she's trying to give. And I think that in that she is leaving her mark. She's leaving a very beautiful legacy on all of them. They're all changed.
And that's actually of the sort of lighter side of things that does relate of all sort of Chouinard's character. I had a friend who played a gig and he's like, I just got paid $100 cash. I'm buying you all drinks now. I'm like, we're just like in La Bohème. But also Rodolfo has a very earnest side, even though he's has fun with his friends. He's sort of a little bit different, that feels, than the rest of the gang, or at least he seems also to be in some ways ready for someone like Mimi to show up in his life.
Absolutely. He's sort of a proto-emo character.
Yeah. Coldplay.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, whereas Mimi is sort of the anchor or the rock. You know, there's all of these people throwing plates at each other around, and there she is in the center of it going, oh, this is all very interesting. She loves him so much, I can tell.
So, try not to get hit by a boa.
Yeah. Yeah, Rodolfo is the writer, the poet, the big sort of open, bleedy heart on his sleeve kind of guy.
And you get, it's interesting, your character is both, you know, we don't know as much about him, some of more of his inner life, but he is just part of this group. And I love the whole story with the parrot. Yeah. You can tell us quickly.
Chouinard is the extrovert of the group. I think when he comes in the room, he already knows what he's going to get back. And it at times it can be over the top. But I think people have accepted him as kind of being this otherworldly figure because he's seen it all. He's done it all. And I think he kind of ties the room together when he can, but he also knows the when the elephant's in the room, he can leave. And so he's kind of a chameleon in that way. But also for me, I mean, I feel as though I'm Chouinard in real life a little bit.
I was just going to say that.
You know, I love to walk into a room and I love to make people laugh and just kind of have like a good time and kind of feel out the room. You know, feel out the room, Drill. But I just think there's this jovialness about him I can't even think of the word.
Well, it's great that the musician character is the most generous and sweet and exuberant one of the group. But for us, I mean, he's like, oh, yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah, the musician's the nice one.
So this is a beloved story that over decades, more than a century now, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I think,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well over a century that has continued to relate to people for its human characters. But we also alluded to earlier that opera has been growing and changing over time. And I think as I look at all of your bios, looking at the different sort of things you've done with the art form, I was wondering if you could share some about how you think about the stories you're telling, whether it's an interesting project you've been part of or what you brought to it that was different, perhaps, than approaching La Boheme, or in some ways, perhaps, there are elements that are the same.
Well, I have had the luxury of having a lot of composers that I've went to school with or that I meet along the way that while I'm working on a Notte di Figaro or a Boheme will say, oh, I saw you in this production, or I've worked with them on a song cycle they've done and they've written this opera about, you know, crossing the street. And it's about 60 minutes of crossing the street. And it's sounds a little crazy, but it's something that we have all can relate to. But there are a lot, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of stories that are very current with themes such as police brutality, for me being African-American male, or there's a piece I'm doing at Seattle Opera called The Falling and the Rising about the military soldiers and what they go through and how their journey going home as an injured soldier, you know, affects their family life, but also affects their daily routine and how they get there. So it's really cool to do these pieces that are current, but also biographical or autobiographical in a sense. So it's really cool to be able to live in these moments, not just because it was written during the Florentine Camerata. You know, it's like, no, this person lives next door to me. It's kind of cool.
I was about to say, on the that's at Glimmerglass this summer. There's Blue.
Yes,
that's
Blue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I know there's the Move Opera, and there's also, I think, some, yeah, there. Just talked to a composer about her work about Lake Erie and environmental dumping and setting congressional hearings to, mm-hmm. you know, operatic texts. So it's fascinating to see that this art form does still work for not just these grand story or, you know, older stories.
Right.
Yeah. I guess have either of you been sort of working with other stories that fascinate you, perhaps newer, more contemporary opera or?
Oh, I wish. Yeah, my big gooey olive oil voice. They only want me for all the 100-year-old stuff. I don't get to do any of the new fun ones.
You want to switch careers?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth or anything, but sometimes some of my friends, I'm like, oh man, Moby Dick, that's a new one, that looks pretty cool, or this other, you know. No, I do a lot of the Puccini and the Verdi and the...
And even within that, though, I guess, although we've talked with La Boheme, maybe with another role, how is it that as an opera performer, we've talked about this art form adds so much, that you're a singer, an actor, mm-hmm. so you're delivering words, but there's so much right. to it. What is it that goes into making a character?
Yeah.
And of course, something very complicated and tell me in a minute.
Just.
Well, I can only speak for myself in terms of I try to be something of a multidisciplinary artist, you know. I try to write things just to know what that's like, right? And I play instruments to know what that's like, and then I try to direct things or conduct, you know, so you can have that experience within you, because in the moment of being on stage for someone, it's impossible to actually in the moment think down all the specific tracks. You sort of have to rely on instinct for some of it, at least at any given time. For me, the approach is somewhat simplest. Play what's on the page to the audience. And a lot of that work has already been done for you in those ways. The composer has put things in the music that is going to convey what you need to, and the librettist and the director and the conductor. So a lot of these things are sort of done for you. So if you'll just try to be as simply and purely what it is you're supposed to be at that time, I find that works best for the audience.
And Elaine, for you, women's roles have changed in the past few centuries, perhaps. What do you find with your different characters that you approach?
You know, I have played women that I really love. A lot of them are in very difficult positions. I just played Aida for the first time, and then I followed that up immediately by my first time playing Anne Boleyn in Donizetti's Anna Bolena. And they were very different. Those two were very different. One was a princess in hiding that had been forced to become a slave, who dies. And the other one is, of course, the famous Tudor queen who dies.
There's some that don't die, right?
I don't play those.
I think I Puritani surprised me the most. I was like, right, that many mad scenes and nobody died?
Right. But, you know, earlier in the season, I played Tosca, which is one of my favorite characters, who also dies. So a lot of different fates for these women. And, you know, we're talking a lot in the industry. The Me Too movement, of course, is touched our industry. And women are having a louder conversation about how we're treated. And I think in a lot of these operas, you know, there's been conversation about, well, should these operas be put away? Should the endings be changed? I don't think so. I think that we should not ignore our past. We should not ignore the experiences of women. We should find thoughtful ways of presenting these stories. So, you know, in Tosca, you see the tremendous pain that this woman is going through when, you know, a man is basically giving her a choice of, you know, allow yourself to be raped or I'm going to kill your lover. And there is an attempted rape and there is a murder and then there is a suicide. I mean, there's a lot in that opera that is really intense. When I did Anna Bolena, I did a lot of research because, of course, she's a real figure. It's the first time I was playing a historical figure. There was a lot to read. And she's sort of like the original feminist. You know, she wanted power. She wanted a seat at the table. She wanted to rule. She wanted the crown. She didn't so much love him. She just wanted the crown. and she almost was successful. She goes out in a big sort of fiery blaze, but she almost did it. And then, of course, she gives birth to Elizabeth I, which is really our first feminist. So when I was, you know, learning this role, I was reading I was experiencing in this music a kind of aggressivity in the way that he wrote her that he doesn't write necessarily for his other women. And it was amazing. And so at the end, when she has this like 20-minute mad scene, she goes through so many colors of what's happening internally. But the very end, Copia Iniqua, is just this fiery, like, she's basically saying, I would send you to hell, except I need God to forgive me so that he'll take me to heaven. I mean, that's basically she goes out on that line. So it's, you know, I think that these stories are stories that have existed repeatedly in our experience as women in various iterations. And I think it's important for us to tell these stories, but just to do so in a way that is thoughtful, you know, not to have, you know, gratuitous violence or gratuitous sex, to tell these stories thoughtfully, because these are important portrayals that we need. So I always feel very lucky to be telling these stories.
And then perhaps, Jerry, I can ask you, as a director of operas, what are some of other things you're thinking about in the story that you're telling? You've sort of alluded to letting the cast do their work, but perhaps there's still, you have a guiding hand there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think my main focus right now is actually Finger Lakes Opera and kind of creating something in this region, in this area, where before there wasn't anything. And so that's a big challenge for us. But you know, you can tell, and you'll be able to hear it when you come to the performance, the caliber of singers and the caliber of production that we're able to accomplish is really very exciting. And the organization's growing as well. So that's, you know, and I'm thinking 3 and 4 seasons down and 5 seasons down the line, to try and build our audience and to try and also incorporate these same issues that we're all talking about, new operas, telling old operas in new ways perhaps, but all of these things enter into as you're planning not only seasons of an opera company, but the first seasons of a new opera company. It's even more of a challenge.
Well, and I have about a minute left, so everyone has about 15 seconds if there's anything else you want to add. Otherwise, I'll just wrap it here and thank you very much for sharing all your perspectives on La Boheme and your work in the world of opera.
Support live theater. Yes. If you don't come, it doesn't survive.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, Mona.
Thank you so much.